Blog Talk Radio.
And thank you for joining the Women Veterans Speak program. Today is Monday, and we're glad to have you joining us. My name is Kathy Santos, and I'm the founder and executive director of the National Alliance of Women Veterans Incorporated, headquartered here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're just so delighted to have our listening audience here, and who have supported our program, and we'd like to start by announcing a couple of things that are going on. Of course, we have the National Center for Women and Veterans, who is hosting their first summit in July, the 15th to the 17th in Washington, D.C. You can either Google it or go to our website and get the information at www.nawvphilly.com. We also have a benefit and birthday celebration for myself here in Philadelphia on July the 10th, Sunday. The details and flyer for downloading is also on our website at www.nawvphilly.com. Today we will be discussing with our guest, host, Black Hawk, who has gathered some very interesting information on PTSD. And we're going to talk about some of the misconceptions on the topic of women veterans and their transitioning issues. So we want to get her on the line very quickly. Black Hawk, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Sorry I wasn't able to get a chance to have a pre-conference, but, of course, I've always trusted your material. You bring such valuable information to our program. I'm so delighted to have you with us today. I'm going to just kind of open up the mic to allow you to preface our dialogue with any information you'd like to share. I thought that we would just invite all of our listening audience in to share with you on this very important topic that you felt was needed for such a time as now in our military involved the issues concerning PTSD and the diagnosis and so forth. So let's hear from you.
Thank you, Kathy. Listeners, this has been brought to my attention, and I think it is something that we need to address at a national level relating to PTSD, military sexual trauma, and many misconceptions held by the general public, civilian population in particular. I think it is time for us to begin a dialogue about putting a face on the victims of military sexual trauma, because it has been brought to my attention and it's been echoed with many people that I've spoke to, both in the clergy and in the civilian sector. When it comes to understanding the type of abuse and the type of victims that we are perceived to be an oxymoron, so to speak. I'll put it this way. If we were raped in a parking lot, it would be understood. If we were raped in a dark alley, it would be understood, accepted, and we would be treated compassionately accordingly. But the fact that we are victims of sexual abuse in a military setting, frankly, does not seem to make too much sense to the civilian population. First of all, their conception is the following. Well, you were taught how to fight, so you should have been able to fight them off. And in addition, what you must realize as well is we are making them aware of the fact that we suffered this violence at the hands of fellow soldiers. Those soldiers could be their husband, a brother, uncle, maybe even, you know, their dad that happened to be in the military. And they have a very hard time reconciling that fact that this would happen. We need to sensitize the civilian community in this regard. You know how they have public service announcements, Kathy, about PTSD now? Well, we need to go ahead, and I think it's time for us to be more visual and let them see, yes, I'm a woman, and I was subject to this type of abuse, or yes, I'm a man, and I was subject to this type of abuse. Because until they realize that once you set the uniform aside, we are still human beings, and we are victims. So they need to get past looking at the opinion that we're all G.I. Janes and rough and, you know how to use a weapon. We are human, and we should be treated with the same level of respect and compassion as any other victim of sexual a sexual crime. If it means that we do our own public service announcement showing the face of the victims, I do believe it's high time that we do so. Because one thing that I've noticed, particularly when we try to seek counsel, faith-based counseling, there is often, more often than not, a notion that, oh, it's particularly when it comes to the women, you know, you were their recreation, you asked for it, you liked it, you condoned it, and it's very hard for them to accept the fact that, no, we were victimized. A lot of them can't get past the point that we wear combat boots and we happen to work in an environment which tends to be the majority men. That in itself kind of rubs them the wrong way. Combined with the fact that now we're coming back and we're telling them what men did to us, they really, it's kind of hard for them to get a grip on. And I'm pretty sure that there's many other women out there that have had the same experience. And it's time for us to go, it's time for us to be more vocal in this regard. Now, I did ask several people that I know, some in clergy, some in other, you know, local groups and organizations, if they would be willing to share their opinion in regard to what I know from firsthand experience. And while off the record, they concur that, yes, they are pretty much stuck in the dark ages, so to speak, if I may be blunt. But no, they're not willing to voice their opinion from the I don't know what you want to call it, from their vantage point, from where they work, from the culture that they're raised in. Back to you, Kath. Kathy, are you there?
I am. I will say that I'm listening to you, but the recent class action lawsuit, of course, you and I and another woman veteran from this area went to Washington, D.C. on February the 15th, and I think the 17 women that they put on the face of that lawsuit is the face of PTSD. I think the suggestion is that we needed to create an image of just what you've just described. And the MST lawsuit has become that for me. Also, I want you to be more specific in your request of what it is that you're saying we need to do, because what has happened from that MST lawsuit, it has become a benchmark for us in a nationwide attention to the issue of PTSD and military sexual trauma. I think that the visuals that are given as a result of that is what the amount of publicity that has been received has supposed to demonstrate thus far. Now, I will tell you what I'm reading on Facebook. Anu Bagwadi, you remember her. She was one of the lead consultants on this class action lawsuit. Her group, SWAN, the Service Women Action Network, has taken the lead on this women veterans activities, PTSD, and everything concerned. I don't know exactly what our resources will allow us to do in that. I mean, I have been out here for the last 18 years, and I don't know if it's what it would take to get more attention on the issue. I think the attention is on the issue. I think the PTSD has a face. But I'd like to see some of the other distinctions recognized, and that is the availability of health care and the treatment diagnosis for all of those who are involved. I would also like to see the preferences given to the OIF and OEF theater systems spread beyond those parameters. There are many women who I experienced when I testified before Congress back in 1993. There were women from World War II. There were women from the Gulf War era. And I'm sure there were several wars in between and military campaigns outside of the country that women who have not come forward for many reasons, the restrictions or obstacles, were not able to tell their story. So the image is there. I think it's clear that what's going to be more important to us locally is to generate what is happening nationally. What we have done, I think, of this radio program from Philadelphia and the work that we've done on the ground here has begun to put a connection between what is seen on CNN and some of the other national networks. We are the face. We are the face of what is going on. You know, for many years, you and I have experienced PTSD and some of the symptoms concerns that were kind of swept under the rug. As we continue to expose and to become the voice of many of those who don't have a mic or don't have the kind of exposure and resources that we have been given, I think that we are the face. The PSAs, I think, can become a part of that. I would love to do a documentary. I have been given the script of Ashana Way, that wonderful play in New York, where it talks about the seven lives of women and the two males who were victims of military sexual trauma. We have become the face. I think as we gain access to the various mediums, television, radio, we are the face and we are the voice. Now, the question to me now becomes, what are we going to do?
That is what we need to, that's what I'm putting out here on the table, people, because a lot of people don't understand, especially like I have been blessed enough to have someone with, you know, like faith-based counseling, so to speak, albeit it's not official, but it took a while for them to understand why I'm calling 3 o'clock in the morning with nightmares. You know, why I only felt comfortable talking to one specific individual in regard to my distress. Why I didn't mix in with the rest of the group and things of this nature. And a lot of them, when you say just plain PTSD, they perceive it to be something as a result of roadside bomb, things of that nature. When in reality, many of us are traumatized by other things that have happened in and out of combat, like military sexual trauma. So I concur with you wholeheartedly about a lot of the people that have been exposed to or have been victimized as a result of this type of an injury are not coming up to the plate. They're not raising their hand. They're saying, yeah, it happened to somebody like me too. Yeah, it happened to me 20 years ago. Yeah, it happened to me. There's still a stigma there, and many still feel uncomfortable, or they believe that since they have been able to cope with it by various means and have moved on in their lives, the fact that they remain silent about this issue is kind of reinforcing the fact that we need more of us to be more vocal and more visual, because it encourages those that have kept this in silence, suffered in silence, the encouragement to perhaps seek help and step up and forward themselves. Because as long as we, as a group, despite the fact we all know this has been going on, basically since there was a United States military, they're going to continue to pretty much fall between the fallen cracks or pretty much suffer in silence. Because one comment was made to me that I really took to heart, and it was from a clergy member, and missionaries all around the world. And they deal with rape victims that were raped at the hands of the enemy, especially in many of the Muslim countries, they tend to, they'll go through and they will rape the women, literally sometimes rape them to death. So they can't have children. They have to get surgery to reconstruct their bladder because they have no bladder function and things of this nature. But it never occurred to them that United States military women are subjected to the same thing. They are used to seeing other armies do it to other women. But it's kind of hard for them to embrace the fact that our own soldiers do it to us. And that is something that we really need to be forthright about.
I could not agree with you more. But what I do appreciate is that we are not where we were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, not even 3 years ago. And I think that where we are at present, we are at a different place in our lives in appreciating what is available now to help us get through. I think that we have to become responsible and how much we are going to release personally to get past this. You know, I have tried to survive under certain circumstances that are associated with my experience, but I refuse to be stuck there. I have refused to become somewhat stagnant because there were so many things in my life when I went to the military that I want to do. I have the strength and abilities to do those things, I believe. So I have to make sure that in saying I have PTSD, the stigmas are there because people want the stigmas there. People want to be identified as victims. Some women who have been victimized, who are victims, they want that stigma. They want to carry that with them for life. They want to be identified as a PTS victim who has been raped in the military. They want that stigma because associated with it, comes with them an opportunity for them not to forget. Many things are associated with not wanting to forget. But for me, I don't want to wear it. That's just my personal feeling. I don't want to continue to wear something that to me is excess baggage.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to put certain things behind me. With anything else in life, we have to determine, choose those options that are going to make our life more bearable under conditions that we have been under, whether it's deliberate, our own fault, or fault of somebody else. We have to learn how to get past some things in our life. Now, for me,
right,
I choose to go the other route because I think I provide a strength to other women who are weaker than I am. So I push a little harder not to hold on to that piece of it. It's there, but I have a compartmentalized on a safe little place in my brain, and it only comes out if I live it, you know, or push to the wrong area, then I can deal with it. But the thing about it is, I believe it's important for us to try to find some place in our life that we can become functionable.
Yes.
Instead of being dependent on a 20-year incident. And it's hard. It's harder for others than it is for some folks. You understand what I'm saying? But for those who are able to push through and have the like you and I have family, many people don't have what we have. They don't have family. They don't have church. They don't have many of the support mechanisms that we have to help us to become stronger. But at some point, we have to reach back and say, look, I have made it. I want to help somebody else. This is what I have done.
Exactly.
I wanted to share it. Create platforms. Now, we are in a dynamic place in our history that we are a face that doesn't look like many of the other faces. It's very victimizing what we've experienced. And I look at the 17 women, those young girls, 25, I think 21, whatever the youth. Part of that 17 of that MSC class action lawsuit.
Yeah.
So they have the rest of their lives. They have the rest of their lives. Can you imagine another 40 years from now, they're still talking as though it happened yesterday. We have to release at some point in order to function. in our day-to-day lives. I think that is the direction of the VA. We have been given various resources and outlets and forums and workshops and many different things that we have to take advantage of. So I want to direct the National Center for PTSD. If they go to the Department of Veterans Affairs website, they have so many resources there. When you talk about PTSD, we have to make sure that we connect with those resources and see what works for us. Would you agree with that?
Let's see
what
works
for us. Because we are the face, but we have to make sure that those who we become the image of it for, that we are in a position to research. We are intellectuals. We are researchers. We seek to educate ourselves and then become empowered because there was nobody there for us. So we were left to create many of these mechanisms for our own self and existence. So now that we have accomplished some of those very basic goals, even though this thing is very layered, because you really, really never ever get to the core of it, because the one thing I know that has been somewhat egregious with you is that these perpetrators are still in position to recreate these same things in other people's lives.
Yeah.
So I do know that we have to fight and advocate for what is not being done now, and that is, what are we going to do about those perpetrators? What are we going to do about those individuals who are still in the military, walking around as though their feet have not touched the ground, and they have other victims who have suffered since us? What about those people? What about that scenario?
That's one of the main things that we need to concentrate on thoroughly, because one of the things that has happened, just as you stated, you know, when I went through back during the late 80s, early 90s, if for you to be able to, first of all, they were friends with JAG. They were friends with the project. They all were in the officers' club and things of that nature. And you were victimized twice, because if you were able to pursue an investigation in regard to the perpetrator, you are the one that it's you against a higher-ranking individual. That higher-ranking individual, when they investigate them, it's during a closed-door session. But your file is open for everyone to review. And that is one thing that hampers many. That's one thing that prevents many of us from coming forward. Additionally, there is no redress for them, because what happens to you? You wind up getting transferred to another unit, and your reputation precedes you. You get adverse efficiency reports. You're labeled as a troublemaker, or you're labeled as easy, or you're labeled as somebody that's not a team player, because you're making the unit, you're painting the unit, you're making the unit look bad. And albeit this is a small step for us, but Kathy, as you stated, if we do not find a way to ensure that the perpetrator is sanctioned, is dealt with, not in just a non-judicial punishment, or we'll give them a talking to level, but they are prosecuted for the crime they've committed, this is not going to go away.
Kathy?
Hello?
Yes, we had an audio problem.
No, I thought I was just listening to you. Please, go ahead.
But that's my main thing. And yes, we have. Yes, we've made huge improvement in the fact that we're even being recognized now. But as long as there's nothing in place, as long as there's, I know they talk about there is, judicial punishment, but it's not being implemented and no action being taken upon it. I recall one sensitivity class where individual got up on the daggone, well, he did some very vulgar things in the class, informing the people that he was supposed to be giving sensitivity training to This is called sexual harassment, so don't do it to your females. But what he was doing up on class, what he was doing on the podium was making a mockery out of women that were being harassed in that manner. So as long as we have that Neanderthal mentality in places of authority, we're going to continue to walk into a brick wall. And that's unfortunate.
Well, you know, I think that we are here today, and it's not a coincidence that we are having this opportunity to speak about our experience. It's a welcomed opportunity for me to have this medium, you know. And for the past 5 years or so, when I was on a more public and studio broadcast, we shared a lot of information, including some of the other dynamics, because it wasn't as public then. Now PTSD has become the new favorite term. But when we think about PTSD and the different terminologies that we refer to as stigmas or diagnosis or those things that we become attached to through that medical environment, that clinical environment, we also, as independent thinkers, as adults, have to determine what life we choose. You know, we can be labeled, but what we label ourselves? What is our identity? How we identify with ourselves? Because before we went to the military, we had lives. And I was ambitious before I went into the military. I went into the military with a goal and an objective. And it was somewhat met, but I came up with a little bit more added stuff, unexpected. So with that, I have to resort back to my life from who I was. But I remember it. When I wanted to become an attorney and I wanted to do all these great things in life, I wanted to help all these wonderful people to do better. But now my life has taken a different turn, so I don't dismiss my dreams. I think people have to remember who they were before they went into the military, because
yes.
we're not born into that environment. We choose to go into that environment. But
mm-hmm.
I think unlike what happens to us in the military, in many of our communities, particularly where I am in the urban community of Philadelphia, how different would it be had I not gone into the military?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? We meet with such unfortunate situations sometimes in life that, how can we continue to hold the military responsible for all of our life's ills? We can't.
Yes.
Because life brings you situations and circumstances that we have to deal with. And I think
yes.
we can be responsible in what we will attribute to the military and what we can take responsibility for on ourselves. And aside from the fact that our violations, you know, I was violated before I went into the military as well. Now, what I know that the military and the VA has done to me, aside from all of that, has been nothing short of criminal in how they treated me in response to what happened to me that was not my own fault in the military. So we have to make those distinctions about what is military, what is actually the Department of Veterans Affairs, because these are separate entities. Now, they have, in certain states, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs within the Army National Guard, like in Pennsylvania, they have the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. But it's run by reservists who have never, in some cases for many years, they've been run by reservists who have never even served in active duty.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at the whole dichotomy of what the military represents to us and to those people who we try to depict this image to. You see what I'm saying? What is it we're
yes.
trying to tell them? Because we understand certain distinctions and dichotomies that most people don't understand or don't want to understand. Some people want to be in denial. You understand what I'm saying? Some
yes.
people around us want to, and you talk about military too. There are so many other distinctions. You talk about now what I've experienced recently that I did not know existed to the level that it did, but there's a racial and ethnicity. There's a different nationality. These very distinctions play different roles in the military. And when you come out, they play an even different role in our federal government and our Department of Veterans Affairs and other agencies that are less familiar with the Department of Defense and so forth and so on. You understand what I'm saying? So you
yes.
have to really, really dig deep into who do we approach about what it is we are trying to do, what is our overall objective. For me, it is to continue to fight to there was a Facebook post. Let me just get to that because I think this will help us. There was a Facebook post yesterday from our New Mexico a West Coast person who said they thanked Anuba Wadi for doing this for us. My response was, this is a concerted effort in what is being done. I've been out here for many, many years, you know, and I've known all these people who are out here now who are taking on these very dynamic roles in the movement for women veterans, but there is no single hero.
Yes.
No one gets that credit.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are those of women veterans died fighting for this thing. You know, it has not been an easy road for anybody. And for anybody to come on this wave now after the suffering and the and on the shoulders of those women veterans who have fought for many, many years. I'm talking about Dorothy McKay in Chicago. We got people who have been out here for years fighting. I was in Congress in 1993, and I was on the heels of somebody that had gone before me.
Yes.
So we have to continue to be honest about what the faith should look like and what that faith means to this country. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because oftentimes when I see the White House addressing the issue of military families, I don't see the various representations and the diversity that should exist in those various groups or those settings. So we have to continue to make sure there's an equality in that representation. That's what the fight becomes, that
yes.
the equality exists. You know, we have this awesome dialogue, and I read Facebook, and I listen to what they're doing on the West Coast, and they have a lot of commonalities in why things aren't happening and less of what is happening, because what is working, people aren't talking. When you see people getting funded and they consult with groups, they're not talking. We hear the complaints about those various groups that sound much like, where are the resources? Why can't we get help? They're talking. So as in the common cliche, those that talk don't know, and those that don't know are talking, because we really don't know what it takes to get those million-dollar funds to create our own. But I will tell you this, to become a veteran service organization is very much a part of the process. And to become a grassroots organization is a totally different process. So if you want to get involved in helping veterans or becoming an entity or recognizable veteran support or assisted organization or individual, you have to go through that process. Through the Department of Veterans Affairs, become a veteran service organization or individual who desires to help or assist veterans, and that you get chartered. And you get on this organization a list through the Department of Veterans Affairs when they've identified you as such. But you have to apply for that. You have to be trained and get a certified veteran service officer, and so forth and so on. So,
yeah.
So to talk from what angle, you have to know, are we a spokesperson as a speaker as on our own issues? What is our agenda? Do you desire to become a veteran service organization to be sanctioned by the Department of Veterans Affairs, or that procedure where you are more recognized and in that flow? You understand what I'm saying? So you have to know,
yes.
you have to kind of learn and research those different avenues for what it is that you're trying to do, what response you want, and who you want that response from. Otherwise, it becomes an internal fight as to nobody's helping me, I don't know what to do. But you have to research your objective. What it is out there for those other ones who you can identify with, who have sought that same objective, and collaborate. For me, it has worked at both. I have my position in that I was a victim, but I'm an advocate, and I provide outreach. It's clear. I try not to steer too clear from those, because there's so many people doing so many different things. But the respect that you get from those who want to ride the tide to suggest that one single person is the answer for all of our ills, that's a misrepresentation of the fact. Because I've seen this cycle over and over and over again over the years, and we can continue to boost up, but we have to choose who we were to identify with, because see, everybody has their own various objectives they're trying to fulfill and identify with, and some of us have different agendas. So for me, I'm very particular about what I recognize as the faith and what I recognize as the help. You understand what I'm saying? Because what
yes.
you see as help is not necessarily help for you, or it is not necessarily something that you're going to be identifying with on the long term, because the objective at the end of the day could be to align themselves or to coalesce with organizations that ultimately have an agenda that totally detached from what it is that your original goals were. So you have to be, I've been in this thing so long that, you know, you have to read it like a book and know what it is that you want as a veteran woman, what it is your objective, and what it is that it'll take to get to that next level in your desire to help veterans or to help yourself. You understand what I'm saying? But these are very, very clear goals that have to be set from that person who's out there doing this thing, because it's all out there. It's a vicious cycle now of somewhat confusing if you don't really know how to navigate through this whole, I'm going to say, rubric. Yeah, it's an avenue. You have to know how to navigate through it. So when you say you want to do a PSA, you have to set that goal to do a PSA. I'd love to do a PSA and to put your face on it. I'd love to do a Mind TV documentary for about a half an hour, WHYY. I've communicated all that with the individuals. We have the script from a shot away. It was a wonderful 2-week sold-out play in New York. They sent me the script, and we can rewrite it to kind of zero in on some of our specific concerns here in Philadelphia. I've been given that permission, but I've been very select on how I distribute or disperse information that I have been trusted with because
yeah.
of the various manipulation, too, that we have to be honest, that exists in all of this. What is your ultimate objective, and what it is, how would you like to move forward? So we need to start thinking about that in the future if you would like for me to become part of your plan to look, not locally, but we can connect the dots. We've already been to Washington. We know that. We know what's going on there. You understand what I'm saying? So between Washington
yes.
and here, what is it you would like to see done? It's where we begin to focus our plans for the Philadelphia Women Veterans, the National Alliance of Women Veterans Philadelphia Chapter, or Black Hawk and her vision, because you yourself have so many interesting and important ideas and visions for what that woman veteran who has been victim to military sexual trauma has endured, how she's overcome, how you've been successful in raising your child so she's graduating and going on to college, or what is it, what story would you like to tell? I think it gets to become your story. What story would you like to tell? How would you like to be affected? How would you like people to be affected by your life journey through this whole military sexual trauma? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, Cassie. Well, as you know, I'm starting school in July, going back to school.
Awesome.
For legal, because as I told you, I've been through the system with what happened with me. I see a lot of injustice being done in my community, including women veterans, people that get stuck in the red tape rigmarole. They don't have resources, avenues of approach. And when they do attempt to communicate their needs to the administration, whether it's the Veterans Administration, Social Security Administration, you know, I deal with a lot of seniors as well, they pretty much give up in frustration, or their needs are not being met because there's no one there that is really conscious of exactly what they need. They just give them pretty much the standard line and meet this criteria. You're knocked out the door, and it's your fault because you know what to do. What we have to do is we have to take our experience, whether bad or good, as you stated, and we use them. We identify the things that hampered us in our, because you know I've still got a long way to go as well, but in that transition process that we ourselves, how we have been able to overcome these that hampered us, we must take that and use it towards the greater good. And that's why I'm going back to school for legal. When I get done with my legal and I'm a legal eagle, we're going to really have some daggone fun. But the whole point is, like you said, you can't sit there and be stuck in what happened to you then. You got to take what happened to you then and bring it here to make a difference now. Now, albeit sometimes it is a little difficult for me because when I do talk to these women, they